We're going to be speaking, we hope, shortly with Stephen Gowans about another exercise in regime change involving now the great powers who aren't flying over the same space, and in which NATO has gathered all of its warbirds. Even the Germans have come to help out. I would take that, you know, just as anybody with a sense of history. When the Germans show up in the skies over Syria, it might have an issue that NATO ought to go home and look at itself and think about, because one of the little things they all concluded at the end of World War II is probably not a good idea for the German military to be going abroad. And the leading people saying that were Germans. So I would underline, that's kind of important. But we're joined now by Stephen Gowans. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes. Hello, Phil.
Well, hello. It's of course, I want to remind everybody, gowans.wordpress.com. And you've written three really, in my opinion, very important articles. I'm going to read the titles, so we're going to go into this. But it's U.S. role as state sponsor of terrorism implied in U.S. Congressional Research Service report on Syria conflict. That's January 10, gowans.wordpress.com. And the second one, in Syria petition, an odd, quote, left abandoned concrete analysis for demagoguery. And that's January the 5th. And then one I relish very much, the anti-imperialist, quotes, who got Libya wrong, serves up the same failed analysis on Syria. And we're talking about Mr. Gilbert Achar. Now, let's see. On this matter, let's establish this. U.S. role, the U.S. Congressional Research Service, I don't know how you knew to go find that one. It is rather revealing. It's a little tentative, but the conclusions are quite surprising, or shocking, I guess. This agency several things are emphasized there about the false picture. If you compare the report, there's a false picture that the State Department, White House sell, and then the reality. You want to go into that? For example, that who's fighting one another? And they say it's not Sunni versus Shia.
Yeah, that's right. And many people do say that, including people on the left, create this impression that they like to point to the fact that the rebels are Sunni and then imply that there's some kind of sectarian war going on between the Sunnis and an Alawi-led oppressive government.
The Toronto Star editorial says that. I mean, they said his Alawite regime.
Yes. And yet, you have to ask the question. I mean, so we have the rebels on the one hand, and they're battling the Syrian Arab army on the other. Well, the Syrian Arab army is predominantly Sunni. And the report from the Congressional Research Service points out, quote, most rank-and-file military personnel have been drawn from the majority Sunni Arab population. Also point out, quote, Sunni conscripts continue to fight for Assad. So this isn't a battle. It's not a sectarian battle. It's a battle between, Syria are Sunni fundamentalists who want to impose their version of Islam on Syrian politics and society. And on the other hand, Syrians, including Sunnis, who embrace a vision of a secular, non-sectarian government. And then I should also point out that the rebels are not all Syrian. In fact, ISIS, or Islamic State, as according to another Congressional Research Service report, 25,000 men under arms from 100 countries.
100.
And this is often called a civil war. Well, then you can fight.
Which also, by the way, raises the issue of mercenaries, which President Putin of Russia has said loudly and clearly. And I haven't noticed the people wanting to engage him in an argument about it, but he says they're mercenaries.
Yes. Well, and many of the rebels are being paid by the United States and its regional allies. Mm-hmm. They'd be quite open about that.
Yeah. Of course, I know that you're fond of facts and that you like logic. This committee, by the way, whoever drafted this, it must be rather amusing at some level for them, because all they do is state what their investigations show, and they say these armed people who entered Syria don't have grassroots support. That's what their finding was, right?
Yeah, and to quote directly from the report, political opposition coalitions appear to lack grassroots support. And that's completely consistent with some of the polling that's been done in Syria. There's a poll done in the summer by a research firm that is working with the U.S. and British governments. And that poll found that Assad has more support than the forces arrayed against them. They also did a report in 2014. This one was a face-to-face poll. Mm-hmm. And then that one asked Syrians to talk about who it was that best represented their views and aspirations. Well, Assad came out on top. The National Coalition, or the so-called transitional government that the West would like to see to come to power, it was supported by 3% of Syrians.
3%.
Yes, of course. So, I mean, yes, the political opposition coalitions do lack grassroots support.
Yeah, if I understand how the American Congress works, I think their next step is to investigate whoever wrote this report, right? But they also discuss moderates. Now, Mr. Cameron got his parliament all worked up and sweaty and excited about going in to fight for the moderates, of whom he said there were 70,000.
Mm-hmm.
This report says something else. Is it that there are no moderates, right?
Well, interestingly, yeah, he said 70,000. And then the veteran Middle East correspondent Robert Fisk from The Independent said more like 700, but probably 70. And this report says, well, what it does is it cites U.S. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter, who's talking about, well, what's the best way for this to end? He says the best way is for for Assad to remove himself from the scene, and there to be created, and I'm quoting him, created, difficult as it will be, a new government based on a moderate opposition that we have been trying to build.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, I mean, artificial insemination.
Yes. So the moderate opposition doesn't exist. They're trying to build it. It doesn't exist. There's no grassroots support for the political opposition.
Yeah. There's a phrase you use that the U.S., when they talk about this, they say that they're looking for partners, reliable partners.
Yes, and throughout the report.
What would that be?
Yeah, well, throughout the report, there are repeated reference to attempts to establish U.S. partners on the ground. And so the moderate opposition would be U.S. partners. They talk about the attempt to establish certain rebel groups as U.S. partners. And we can just think of U.S. partners as being a euphemism for U.S. puppets. We're looking for U.S. partners to form a government. And they also talk about U.S. partners combining with part of the Syrian state apparatus that the U.S. aspires to co-opt.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. In your articles, the one of the January 10, I really urge people to read these because they're so well researched. There's so much data, information in it. But the CIA trained 10,000 fighters who went into Syria. And according to the report, they are enmeshed with the other rebels. But you point out that it's pretty clear who we're talking about. The CIA trained, I guess those would be instructed in moderation. But who is it that the 10,000 CIA trained people are enmeshed with?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, if you read, for example, the Wall Street Journal has had many reports on this. Well, not directly, but if you read certain reports, you'll see references to things like insurgents who have been trained covertly by the CIA are enmeshed with or fighting alongside more hardline Islamist groups, including Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda's Syria affiliate. And then other reports talking about al-Nusra has fought alongside rebel units, which the U.S. and regional allies have backed, or that the CIA-backed rebels and extremist elements such as Nusra are collaborating. And, to be clear on this, anyone who's enmeshed with or fighting alongside al-Qaeda is a terrorist. And if we looked at it from the perspective of the United States, if you pointed to someone and said, that person's enmeshed with al-Qaeda and fighting alongside al-Qaeda, they would be clearly it would be the case that they'd be denounced as terrorists.
He must be one of them. They didn't put him in a little pink costume and cut his head off.
Right, and they would be
so he must have been standing there while they did cut those heads off.
Yeah, so that invites another interesting question, which is that the United States has two programs for arming and training rebels. One is overt, and the other is covert, which invites the question, well, if you have an overt program, why do you have a covert one? Is it covert? Yeah. Is it covert because who you're actually training and equipping are groups that are designated as terrorists? And, you put the pieces together, that seems to be exactly what's happening. Yeah. Except, they try to maintain this fiction by saying, not that it's Nusra Front, but we're training and equipping people who are fighting alongside Nusra Front and are enmeshed with it.
Yeah. He's strictly instructed, don't cut the head off unless it's a test of membership, and then go ahead and cut it off. This is Stephen Gallant, by the way. And also, again, the report you cite, the Congressional Research Service report on Syrian conflict, one of the points when they sum up what the U.S. is trying to do, number one is they're using ISIS to weaken Assad. Using ISIS to weaken Assad. So that's a partner of some sort.
Yeah, and a number of observers have been pointing out that the U.S. campaign against ISIS seems to be rather tepid and half-hearted. For example, Robert Fisk, who I mentioned earlier, has said that he doesn't even believe that the United States has been serious about destroying ISIS. And if you look at the goal, as articulated by Obama, it was to degrade ISIS and ultimately destroy it. So you might come to the conclusion that the idea is simply to contain ISIS and use it as a tool to put pressure on the Syrian government. And in fact, the Congressional U.S. Services report or research report says U.S. officials are concerned that a more aggressive campaign against the Islamic State may take military pressure off the Syrian government. Now, interestingly, I read another report by the same organization on ISIS in which they cited Obama describing ISIS as a network of killers who are brutalizing local populations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently the United States is willing to allow Islamic State to continue to brutalize local populations in Syria, or they certainly know that that's going on, and part of brutalizing the local population amounts to putting pressure on the Syrian government.
Yeah. So in other words, that brutalization, like the remark Madeleine Albright made so many years ago, it's the price of doing business, right? Again, it's Stephen Gowans. Well, let's take this to another level. The people who claim to be fighting against this war policy and invasion, et cetera, and you may as well link the two together. One of your articles is titled, In Syria Petition, An Odd Left Abandoned Concrete Analysis for Demagogy. And then the second one is titled, The Anti-Imperialist Who Got Libya Wrong Serves Up the Same Failed Analysis on Syria. This is Mr. Gilbert Ashcart. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
He's in both. I notice he's on both, so I figure we can combine. Well, what's going on here? They say that they're describing, and these are rather famous names, some of the people. Tariqa Lee's on this petition called the Global Campaign for Solidarity with the Syrian Get a Load of This Revolution, the revolution in Syria. And Mr. Ashcroft's name is on that as well. What is your, let's put it simple, beef with these individuals and their approach to this conflict?
Well, it's hard to make them out, to either determine whether they're seriously misinformed or just what it is that they're up to. But there are a group of people on the left who have been describing essentially rebels who are seeking this harsh theocratic rule in Damascus as revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, they're just revolutionaries. They're linked to the struggles of Palestinians. They're linked to opponents of neoliberalism in the West.
Mm-hmm. By the way, let me just throw in here, I probably should have at the beginning, the core of their position, both Mr. Ashkar in interviews separately, but also in this petition, is the answer to the situation is that President Assad must go. That's a sine qua non.
Yes, and you look at their position is identical to that of the United States State Department, or identical to that of the head of ISIS. I mean, it's yes, Assad must go. Why must he go? Well, we have all kinds of, you know, not particularly cogent reasons why he must go, other than he's a brutal dictator. Ashkar goes to extremes in suggesting that the Syrian government is the most despotic and brutal in the region. So apparently he's never heard of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you read their petitions, when you read Ashkar's analysis, it's just like listening to the State Department and not the State Department doing...
But then he's able to move around. He gets interviewed by Democracy Now. He gets interviewed by the Jacobin. And they're very, as you point out, they treat him as, you taught me a new word, docent of the left or socialism.
And you could ask why, because, I mean...
I would.
He's done... thing on Libya, so we can go back to Libya and see what he said about Libya and compared his analysis to Libya with what's turned out. And if you do, I mean, people should be shocked. For example, here's something he said about Libya at the time when NATO was considering intervention in the country. He said, if there's no clarity about what a post-Gaddafi Libya might look like, it can't be worse than Gaddafi's regime.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it didn't turn out that way.
Unless, as you say, his idea of better is a bloody mess and attacks on black Africans and every other kind of and a totally destroyed economy and no power to the people at all.
Yeah.
If that's what he means by better, that's better.
He also said that the idea that Western powers are intervening in Libya because they want to topple a regime hostile to their interests is just preposterous.
Preposterous.
Equally preposterous is that they're after laying their hands on Libyan oil. And we know now because there was a report in the Wall Street Journal about a year after Gaddafi was ousted and murdered that indeed oil companies have become exceedingly frustrated by the hard terms that Gaddafi was driving. And then we have some reports from the State Department that were leaked that said that the State Department was complaining that Gaddafi was practicing resource nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then, you know, the New York Times finally summed up, this is a year after Gaddafi's been ousted, that yeah, well, you know, the West did have a problem with Gaddafi, and the problem was oil. He was reserving the jewel, you know, the crown jewels of Libyan oil for the Libyan state oil company and wasn't allowing private Western countries to get their hands on it.
Wasting the money on Libyans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Gaddafi was, not Gaddafi, Ashkar was completely wrong on that. He was completely wrong on what the outcome of intervention would be. And he was completely wrong on everything.
Yeah,
everything
but,
that
yeah.
he said about Libya turned out not to be the case.
And now he's still on the same horse, and he's after Assad.
Well, yeah, and another one of his egregious errors was in saying, Well, you know, it's not Islamist rebels who are trying to overthrow Gaddafi. It's just a bunch of revolutionaries, secular revolutionaries who want democracy and dignity. Well, we know that's not the case.
Yeah.
But now he's saying exactly the same thing about Syria. Everything he said about Libya, he is now saying about Syria. Unbelievably, he says, and this is why I say either he's in a fantasy world or completely misinformed, mm-hmm. he says, it's not true that the revolution, as he calls it, in Syria is being led by Islamists. It's being led by people who are seeking democracy and dignity.
Yeah, and the U.S. is holding them back.
Yeah.
He says that the U.S. should be giving them anti-aircraft weapons. They're not really sufficiently enthusiastic. But, you know, these formulas, I find it amazing that he's telling the same old story. And matter of fact, on Democracy Now, he was pointed out to him. It was pointed out to him he'd been wrong about Libya, and he immediately said, "Oh, I wasn't, no." And his feelings were really hurt. He says people said bad things about him. But he did say those things, as you point out, and also he's got the same formula on Syria. He doesn't really want the U.S. to go in, but he wants them to provide air support. That's okay. And they could, the air support should be there until the bad guy goes away. I mean, what's he been smoking?
Yep, until the bad guy goes away. And what they never talk about is what follows. So what happens when the bad guy goes away? Who replaces the bad guy? They never talk about that. Well, in a way, Achikar does talk about that in his Jacobin article. He seems to suggest that what needs to happen then is that ISIS or Jabhat al-Nusra need to come to power.
Mm-hmm.
And once they come to power, then Syrians will recognize that they don't represent the interests of Syrians either. But that has an interesting implication. That means the slaughter of minority groups in Syria. Now, interestingly, Achikar said in Libya that he supported a no-fly zone because he believed that people were going to be massacred by the Gaddafi government. And yet he doesn't seem to be concerned about the massacres that would happen if ISIS or Jabhat al-Nusra came to power.
No, that's a very telling point. And by the way, what he calls himself an anti-imperialist, and I guess people take him at his word. I mean, a guy could go far in life if everybody just took you at your word. But what kind of anti-imperialist thinks that NATO can be called on to do the good deeds for the people's struggles? That you can just whistle and NATO comes in and bombs them for a while, and then you say, okay, problem solved, go home. NATO is supposed to be as dumb as he is?
Well, he says that he's an anti-imperialist. He also says that the Assad government is pro-imperialist and pro-Zionist, or at least not anti-Zionist and not anti-imperialist.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's...
That would be news to imperialists, I think.
It
broken to them by their brilliant socialist friend. But by the way, you come, and we're winding up here, but just, you point out that such people have existed in history before, and you want to talk about that, or what might be his outlook? Like the world, those who were saying they're going to oppose World War One.
Yeah, I mean, there have always been leftists who have managed to support imperialism, or at least the imperialism of the country to which they belong. And
theirs, yes.
Yes, and you could speculate as to why. It may be because it makes them feel more mainstream, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. He has visions of being on CNN.
Mm, yes.
Well, it's Stephen Gowans and three great articles, gowans.wordpress.com, and I think you've exposed a NATO socialist. I really appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again, Stephen.
Great. Thank you.
There we go. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Taylor Report. I remind you, you can write to us, Taylor@CIUT.FM. By the way, we have many supporters and friends of Cuba here. I would remind everybody, just get this clear. Cuba is a very strong supporter of the Syrian government. And all those who say, oh, no, it's reactionary and this and that, you better start thinking and get your ideas all cleared up, because you're people who follow Mr. Ashkar are damn fools. Anyway, it's again, you can check us out on Facebook / The Taylor Report. And it should be up by Thursday. And so thanks, Lucas. And Joan, again, who does many of our headlines on our website. So taylor-report.com. We'll see you next week.
No other genre of music has